Okay, thank you so much. It's of course a great pleasure to be here, and I would also like to thank the organizers. This is yet another talk on equilibrium. Had I known that there would be so many, I would most probably have chosen something else. But I really wanted to talk about this. The reason is that I started thinking about it about a year ago when I was talking with Gordon, so I realized I couldn't really understand what he was telling me because I didn't know anything, so I decided to start writing down some things. Then I had to stop at some point because I needed to settle something else. I will explain in the middle. And now I'm coming back to it, so you might have seen this talk maybe a year ago, but I want to continue now. There is this numerary invariant preferences here, and I have to first explain what this means. And this is the outline of the talk. I want to talk about preferences in the beginning, then just talk about the market and optimality of agents. Then we go to the bulk of the talk, which is equilibrium. Then some things about bubbles, if there is any time. Right, so I wanted to start with this. And this has to do with preferences, and I'm going to be talking about preferences on consumption. Okay, so there is a dynamic environment, there is a filtration representing the information. I'm having a probability P here, but you should really see this as a baseline in the sense that we only care about the null set. You can think about it in the real world, if you really believe that something like this exists. I mean a real world probability, not real world. So it's kind of so here are the quantities of interest, are the consumption streams, okay, to the agent. So these are cumulative. This means that they will be non-decreasing. Well, I will take continuous, but they could be right continuous if we allow for bulk consumption, adapted with respect to this information. And I'm going to be using densities of consumption rates, basically, with some clock. This will not play any role, you will realize soon. And they live on the product space. Of states and time, of course. And since we are talking about elements here, densities here, basically, the views of agents are really probabilities on the space. So it is just unit mass measures. Okay. Now, numerary invariant preferences are really log utility, but I want to explain a little bit better this, right? You take a consumption stream, which I just generically denote by G, and then let's say you evaluate this quantity, which is really the expectation of the log of the density, okay, under this measure Q. So you see omega and T appear here. Of course, I just do not write anything here, right? And this H is the clock that you use to measure the densities. If you're using log utility, this H is irrelevant for the optimization, right? If I just use something else, H tilde, then dg dh tilde will just be dh dg dh times dh tilde dh. Well, dh dh tilde, then this second term will just go away. So as long as optimization is concerned, this H does not play any role, and this is what I call numerary invariance. Whatever clock you use or whatever way you choose to denominate your consumption, it will not matter for your optimization. Now, if you try to write down the first order conditions, if you have optimality, okay, suppose you want to write first order conditions on G hat, so you take the directional derivative with respect to any other consumption stream G there, so you write down the derivative here, you look around, make sure nobody sees you, you just take it inside without checking anything, and then you realize that this is what you get, okay, this is just the derivative of the log, and of course H disappeared because it had to be here, here, and here, but then it just goes away. So I like this a lot more because this is a quantity that is bounded below by minus 1. Okay, so of course this thing has to be less or equal than 0 because all the directional derivatives have to be less or equal than 0. So this is a very, very well-defined quantity. This integral here, it can take the value plus infinity, whereas this one, you have to talk a lot about whether this is well-defined as an expectation. So the reason that I spent some time away from this project was to ensure that I can say something, characterize what are these axioms that imply that people use something like log utility. So this is an entirely different topic. I'm not going to talk about this today, but the idea is that you input some axioms on the preferences, on the choices really, and then you get a la Savage. I'm writing here, I'm not using Savage's result, but the idea is that you are getting this Q as a byproduct of the axioms that you put. Alright, so this is like the subjective use of an agent, and there is one-to-one correspondence between these subjective views and preferences that are numerary invariant in the sense that your preferences do not change if you change the denomination. Okay, so I spent some time doing that because I really wanted to explain exactly what are the economical conditions that you might have agents that behave like this, and just, you know, answer this question once and for all. The real value of using log utility is that you can actually write down explicitly some things, and you will see we will characterize equilibrium in quite concrete terms. Now, of course, these measures Q, they're not very nice to work with, so I had to fiddle with them a little bit, and you've already seen an example in this, a result in this sense by Hans Vollmer. This is a decomposition of these measures, and I decompose them in two parts, one that has to do with omega and another that has to do with time. Alright, now, this equation here holds this for whatever optional process you put here. You see, instead of Q, I take expectation under, this is the probability P, of dk here. K is adapted right continuous non-decreasing, starts from 0 and should end up to 1, basically. Okay? But it is path dependent, and L is a non-negative local martingale. Now, in what Hans Vollmer has showed you, this L was an actual martingale, so you could write an expectation under Q here. I will come back to this in the next slide. One more thing, okay, so this is, once you have Q, you can get a representation pair of L and K that have these two properties, and I just call it canonical representation of this measure. You can go the other way. You start with any local martingale that starts from 1, and any process increasing, as long as it has expectation 1 to ensure that this measure has unit mass, then you can you can define an optional measure Q. It's the obvious way, such that this pair is its representation pair. Right? So this is complete characterization of all unit mass optional measures. Now, let me go back to the case where L is actually the density of a probability. Then in that case, you can take the last equality here. You can use integration by parts and write the expectation under Q of this quantity times dk. All right, and Q here can actually be seen as subjective use of an agent on the probability space, not on the product space, and K has some kind of interpretation of consumption clock. In this case, if you take it all the way to infinity, the probability that it is equal to 1 is 1. But I have to say that you can find examples where L is not the martingale, it's strict local martingale, and this K does not even go all the way up to 1. Okay, so it's a sub-probability. Okay. Now, once you have this, so this representation pair will help us very much to solve the optimality problem, but let me introduce the market first. So there will be two things that you can do in the market. One is, exchange money in a money market account. So there is a savings account. This is supposed to be on zero net supply, no net borrowing or lending, and it's the usual thing. You have here interest rate. And then you have a positive net supply asset. We will just take unit supply, and this is just a stock, and it offers some dividend rate, D, here. And you write down the dynamics this way. So DS, I add whatever you get from the dividend over S is R plus alpha. So alpha is the excess rate of return here. And then you have sigma DW. W is a m-dimensional Brownian motion. And this the norm of sigma is the volatility process. If M is greater than 1, of course, you are in an incomplete market, okay, because you only have one asset to hedge. All right, so how do we invest and consume? We just use pi, which are the proportions of wealth invested in the stock, the proportion of wealth, and see some kind of consumption rate. Once you write the dynamics of your wealth, starting from little x, is pi times this. Okay, this is just the proportion that you have in the stock. Of course, you have to put the dividends that you're getting here. The remaining proportion is in the bank account, and this is what you take away. Okay, this is just to show you that I can solve the linear SD. So I'm not going to use it. So if you look here, this is the consumption rate of the agent is really C times X. All right? So just be careful that this is the consumption rate at time t. So the financiable consumption streams are of this form. All right, so it's cumulative consumption, right, that you have here. Okay, so these are the objects of choice, basically. And to specify the objects of choice, you need control on the investment and this consumption rate. It's the most natural way to write it in order to discuss the optimality. Okay, so this is a propaganda slide. Maybe doesn't have to do a lot with the actual problem, but I want to discuss a little bit what are the minimal conditions to solve the problem. And these minimal conditions have to do with no arbitrage, of course. But what do we mean by arbitrage? This just means where the volatility is zero, you must have the excess rate being zero. And if you take then the squared Sharpe ratio, it cannot, this process here cannot explode in finite time. Alright, so in this way you can construct a candidate for an equivalent martingale measure, which might not actually be a martingale measure. I just wanted to point out that for interest to us are cases where sigma does not degenerate, because we will want to discuss non-redundant equilibria, which means that you do not have two assets basically giving the same thing. Now, why is this a minimal condition, and what does it have to do with viability of the market? This here condition fails if and only if there is some kind of arbitrage in the market, which I call arbitrage of the first kind. Now, what is this? It is some random variable for some finite time horizon such that it's non-negative, is strictly positive with positive probability, and for any initial wealth that you give me, I can find a pi and some consumption rate. These things might depend on the initial wealth, such that at time t, I can have this wealth. All right? Now, okay, maybe I'm not being 100% precise here. Maybe you should allow for bulk consumption here and not only on for consumption rates. So this is a absence of arbitrage of the first kind is a weaker condition than no freelance with vanishing risk. It's very clear how to construct arbitrages if this does not hold. Okay. The way that you do it, if sigma is zero and alpha is non-zero, then you just invest when the volatility is zero and there is drift. So you can get your arbitrage very easily. If you still have this, but this fails, you can use an approximating procedure and still do it. And Well, this is what I was calling no unbounded profit with bounded risk in a paper with Yannis Karatsos, but I find it better now to call it like this. No arbitrages of the first kind. I was using no cheap thrills at some point because Lowenstein and Willard was calling it like this, and Dimitri told me that this thing had appeared some time ago at a book by Ingersoll, and he has a point that we should not rename things that have already been named. At any rate, the last thing that you want to do is mess with Dimitri. The last thing that I want to do. Okay, enough propaganda, but if you want more information on this, you can just come and see me. Now, let me talk about preferences. You have agents, all right? So you have a finite number of agents, and each one of them has numerary and invariant preferences, which means that they all have some of the canonical representation pair for their views. And I'm just going to assume, this is really for simplicity, we are having an Ito process model, so everything runs in DT. So this has some rate, kappa, here, and the local martingale can be written as an integral with respect to Brownian motion, really, because this Brownian motion generates the filtration there. And this canonical representation pair really separates the solutions to the problems of investment and consumption in a very nice way. The optimal proportions only depend on the local martingale part. So if this L was actually a martingale and the subjective views were given by Q, then this would be the solution you get for the log optimal problem. This doesn't have to be, of course, a martingale. Still, this is the optimal. And the optimal relative to wealth consumption rate is given just by this rate here. Okay, so you can show this, and this is why this pair is so important, because we have explicit formulas now. And let's go to the main part, which is the equilibrium. We have discussed how each agent will invest and consume optimally. All right, so you have, again, let me make sure here that we have all that is needed. So you will have a finite set. These are the representation pairs, okay, for each agent. These are initial endowments. Here it's cash. I'll talk about what is happening if you have endowments in terms of stocks. All right, so these are the optimizers that we have seen in the previous page, and XI will be the optimal, basically, wealth, okay, of each agent here. Now, what are the conditions for equilibrium? So there's the clearing conditions. There are three of them. One is the money market. So this is in zero net supply. Okay, the total wealth in the economy has to be equal to S, so there is no borrowing or spending, borrowing or lending in the money market. So the total market of the agents is equal to the actual wealth of the asset. Here is the stock market clearing. Pi times X divided by S are the units that you have from the asset I, okay, for the ith agent. The total number of units has to be equal to 1, because this is in unit net supply, all right, so this asset. So this is stock clearing, and there is what I call commodity market. Of course, everything is money here, right? So it's the total consumption rate, okay. Remember, X times C is the consumption rate, so the total consumption rate has to be equal to the dividend that the asset gives. All right, so these are the market clearing conditions. And when you search for equilibrium, there are some primitives that are exogenous, the preferences, the endowments, either cash or stock fractions. I'll only be talking about cash, but it's exactly the same thing for stock fractions, a little bit more complicated. So you also get a dividend structure. Okay, so these are the exogenous variables, and what has to be figured out is what is the short rate structure and what is the stock price. Okay. Now, there is almost necessary condition for equilibrium. I was trying to find a stronger word, that very almost, and I will explain later. So I want to introduce these variables. Fi, this is just the consumption, the CI, divided by the dividend rate. We have seen that in the optimal one has to be equal to kappa I. All right, so you take these ones, which are exogenous variables, and you assume that each of them is an Itô process. Okay, this is really needed, and I will explain to you later. Now, it doesn't matter the DT part; you will not even see it anywhere. Of course, it plays some role, but remember that the volatilities of this FIs are given by these phis here. Okay, now in order to figure out the conditions for equilibrium, we need some state variables, and the state variables that we will use is basically the capital distribution in the economy. Okay, so for each agent, this is the wealth, and you divide by the total wealth in the economy. Okay, so in equilibrium, this is really XI over S, and you call this PI. Okay, so these are weights in the simplex, they add up to one. A little bit of notation for any vector here and anything here, this is the simplex, all right? So any vector on the simplex, zeta with superscript p here will just be a weighted average of the zetas, all right? Now, simple proposition. You have exactly what these XIs are, so you can figure out what are the dynamics of each of the p's, and if you do a little bit of work, this is what you get here. All right? Now, what is happening here, of course, you do not see R anywhere, it's because we are taking ratios, so R disappears completely. You do not see alpha here as well, you only see sigma. You don't see alpha because we have explicit formulas for the XIs. So this is what you get. Now I'm calling this an SD. It's not really an SD. It's an SD wannabe. The reason is that, of course, sigma here is not known. This is one of the things that we have to figure out. But it's almost an SD. P appears everywhere. Then everything else is exogenous except for sigma. Okay, so the idea, the strategy is this. If we are able to express sigma also in terms of P, then everything will have to do with P here. We will be able possibly to solve this SD. Once we solve this, we express all other market parameters in terms of the state variables, so everything is revealed in equilibrium. All right? Okay. So how do we figure out what the dependence of sigma on P? Here is what we will do. We will use the commodity clearing condition, which is this one. Okay, so what I do is first I divide by D. Remember, CI over D is just these FIs. And then I also divide by S both sides. So XI over S are the weights. And then you have this equation here. And, you know, sigma appears in the DW part of S. Okay, and you have here 1 over S. Then these, you have the dynamics for P here. These FIs are exogenous, so you equate the DW parts of this thing, okay? And once you do a little bit of algebra, you come up with this equation here. Remember, the phi is the volatility of the Fs, and there is a Q here, which I have to specify. Q here is just this quantity, okay? It's PF for each agent divided by the sum of those. Again, if you just multiply by D and multiply by S, you see that this is just XI CI divided by this total here. And of course, XI CI is just the consumption rate of the agent. So basically, these are the percentages of consumption rate at every point. Okay? So you get this equation for sigma, which you want to solve. Okay? Just note here that Q just depends on P and F is exogenous. All right, so you have to solve this equation here. I'm rewriting it here, so you just want to solve this. It's clear that sigma has to be collinear with that quantity, right? Well, in the case where this is not equal to zero, then you can just solve this by knowing that sigma has to be collinear and then inputting it here. Anyway, you do a little bit of algebra. Again, this is the solution that you're getting. However, there is a chance that this thing here is zero, especially when phi is zero. And if it is zero, you can still have a solution as long as this part in here is zero. Okay? And if you do again a little bit of algebra, this thing is zero if and only if sigma belongs to this set. Okay? So you take all the u's that are unit vectors. And then if you plug in this quantity here, you will see that this thing becomes becomes zero. So here you have a lot of choices, basically, okay? And here you only have one. This is what you have to keep. Well, here you have a lot of choices. If m is equal to 1, which means that u is one-dimensional, so if you only have one Brownian motion, there is only one thing that you can have here. But if you have more dimensions, then you can go around the unit ball and get a lot of sigmas. So we'll come back to this. All right, so here is the solution for sigma, and it only depends on p. You see q here, everything else is exogenous. All right, so this is the function that we were looking for. Once we have sigma and we can solve the previous SDE, we have to express alpha, which is the excess rate of return, in terms of p. We use the stock clearing condition. This pi's here are known, so once you have this equation, you input the pi and you just get that alpha is equal to this quantity. This is exogenous p here, and sigma is already a function of p, so alpha is expressed now in terms of p. Finally, you have to get also the interest rate. Now, you use again the commodity clearing condition, you rewrite it again this way. If you have P, you have S. These are exogenous. You equate the DT parts. So you write down the dynamics of these two things. You just remember that the dynamics for S are like this. So R appears here. It appears in the DT part. So if you equate the DT parts. So I had a formula here yesterday when I was finalizing the slides. And today when I was really finalizing the slides, I made the calculation again and I found something different. So one of the two is wrong. It's very high probability both. But whatever, I mean, if I chose one of the two, I would choose the wrong one. This is Murphy's Law and this is certain. So, but it's clear. I mean, this is why I write here easily, you get R. So it's kind of, but it's clear that you get R from here. Okay. So. Let's recap. The whole thing is that, okay, so all these were necessary conditions for an equilibrium, right? But you can invert all the steps. So this is synthesizing everything. Here is the theorem. If you do all the previous and everything works out, equilibrium is fully characterized. Okay, but let me explain. You have to solve that SDE, all right? Make sure it has a solution. Okay, so this is a part where, you know, you have to use some kind of math, all right? So. Then you just define sigma using either sigma or sigma prime, depending on whether these volatilities of F is zero or not. Then you define the rates of return, define R, and then the market is in equilibrium. Okay, so you are the whole point is to be able to solve an SDE, basically, okay, or at least to show that there exists a solution. Yeah, so let's think about it a little bit more, and let's go to this case where this phi, the volatility of the S, is not zero. Okay, what happens to the SDs that we had? So I use phi tilde for the push of phi on the unit ball, right? So you just take phi and you divide by the norm, and then the SDs that you have to solve become this. All right, so there is only dependence and dependence on P. Everything else, Q is also a function of P. Everything else is exogenous. Now, of course, you cannot solve this, right? The whole point, though, is that if you think about the dependence of things on P, it is kind of Lipschitz dependence. Right? It's Lipschitz dependence, however, it is a little bit unusual because you do not have a Markovian model here. These are just predictable processes. Okay, so you have to work. I don't have a full answer, but the idea is that if this thing, if this phi q does not go close to zero, okay, then you're okay. And the problem if it goes very close to zero is this phi q will be spinning very, very, very wildly. Okay, and I cannot use very good very good estimates, Lipschitz estimates, but things should be okay. Of course, you have to obtain rigorous results. The way that I'm trying to do it now is you transform these equations into equations for local martingales. You get local existence and uniqueness because of some kind of Lipschitz. Of course, again, Lipschitz, you do not have any Markovian structure here, so they're like pathwise Lipschitz. And the only thing that you have to worry about is explosion, but these things cannot explode because they are in 0-1. So then you just keep on moving and moving and moving. And but I don't have a full answer here. Let's go to the other case where this phi is 0. Okay, these are the volatilities of the Fs. I will come back to this. Recall that we can take any sigma that is in this set. Okay? Now, if you take any sigma that is in this set, so like pick any predictable process you want that has a unit size, then you can just go on and solve this equation here. And if you obtain the solution to this, then you set sigma, alpha, and r in terms of p, and you get an equilibrium. The whole point is that you can pick whatever you want, okay? And then you will have different choices for p here, which means that, of course, you can get multiple equilibria. Now, remember that we want non-redundant equilibria, which means we don't want sigma to be zero, right? So you want to be able to pick things here that are not zero. Now, when are you able to pick things that are not zero? Okay, first of all, if you have m equals 1, so if you have a complete market, this is just one number. So you don't have a lot of choices. So we must have incompleteness, more Brownian motions. The second thing, agents have to be sufficiently heterogeneous. What do I mean by this? If lambda p is equal to lambda q, then you don't get anything. How can they be different? Well, lambdas have to be different, okay, so different views. And if you look at q and the dependence on p, if the consumption rates are the same, then p is equal to q. So you must have different agents in terms of beliefs and different agents in terms of rates of consumption. Now, this is the case where phi is equal to zero. Phi had something to do with the ratio between consumption and dividends. So to get phi being equal to zero, which is the volatility here, the consumption rates and the dividend rates have to be smooth, so they must have no DW part. Okay. Now, consumption rates usually, in usual models, they are assumed to be constants, not the dividend rates, though. However, you can think of a situation where you have an annuity, which is a dividend stream that is constant there. Okay. And in that case, you can construct more than one equilibrium. There are some cases where you have closed form equilibria. This is possibly not very interesting because, okay, so complete markets, you can actually write down what these PIs are, okay? But you don't even have to solve the equation. You just know that they have to be of this form. You see, it's only L and K here. Homogeneous beliefs. If you have homogeneous beliefs, everyone must have all the money in the stock. So it's again quite easy to figure out what these P's are. Homogeneous beliefs, I mean that all of this local martingale parts are the same. Okay, same consumption clocks. Again, you can use a trick and actually solve the DST. But these are really not very interesting cases because you don't want to have equilibrium with homogeneous beliefs. Everyone is doing the same thing. All right. And also, this is just a mathematical thing. A complete market case, you kind of know that you can solve anyway. All right, so these are closed form equilibria, but usually you do not get. Now, I want to talk a little bit about this bubble and arbitrages and how they appear in equilibrium, but I will have to think a little bit more about this. So the way that I will define bubbles is via being able to superhedge, via being able to actually perform some relative arbitrage. Okay, so the savings account contains a bubble. Remember, B at time t is what you get if you start from unit capital. So if you are able to start with less than one capital, invest somehow, this just means zero consumption, and you are able to superhedge the savings account, And I will call this a bubble in the account. This is just really arbitrary with respect to the savings account, right? And it's the same thing with a stock. It contains a bubble if there exists some initial capital, which is strictly less than one, and some investment strategy, so that if you start from this initial capital, which is less than one, use this strategy and consume zero, then you can get more money than, and here you don't put the asset there, the stock price, okay? You put what you get if you have all your money in the stock, because you're also getting the dividends there, right? So if you are able to super hedge the stock, again, this is just arbitrary relative to the stock, right? Because this is what is really happening. Now, okay, so there is this folklore fact that you cannot have positive net supply assets that have bubbles. Okay, and the idea is that representative agent would not invest in the stocks if there was a bubble in the stock. Yes, I'm talking here about complete markets. I haven't really talked about representative agent, but this piece that you have seen, the capital distribution, these are really the weights, the Pareto weights that you use for a representative agent. Okay, they're dynamically changing. But you don't have to use any representative agent idea here to solve the problem. All right, so there is an example. I'm not going to get into details, really. Of course, if it has to do with local martingales, it somehow has to do with the inverse of the three-dimensional reciprocal of three-dimensional Bessel process, which satisfies this equation. Here, doubling is just one-dimensional. We are in a complete market, okay? So this is just reciprocal of three-dimensional Bessel, and everyone knows it's a strict local martingale here. And I just have this consumption rate for the agent. You can show that really this is this defines some preferences. The market is very easy, no interest rate. S is written like this. This is the dividend stream. Everything is very explicit. If you calculate what is the optimal investment, you put everything in the stock, all right? And consumption is exactly the one that you would expect from equilibrium. With only one agent, you actually have equilibrium there. The point is that the agent puts all the money in the stock, and what is happening is that if you put all your money in the stock and collect the dividends, you exactly get L. L is a strict local martingale here. Okay. So what happens is that you know that you can start from less wealth and exactly replicate the stock. This payoff, which is L, so you can start from wealth less than one, and you can replicate exactly this at every time T. This little X does depend on T, which would mean that the stock contains a bubble. Okay, so this is an equilibrium model where you have a bubble in the stock. The reason why the investor doesn't try to use the arbitrage, of course, you have some constraints in terms of you don't want to go negative in the wealth. But also, if you see what is happening here, the views are a little bit skewed here, okay? So it's not, the investor does not regard the stock price as a local martingale. And also, consumption happens when the asset is high, okay? when L is high. So you do not care that it is a local martingale. You want to have money there because it's really important to you to consume when the stock price is high. Anyway, you can just follow this example. You can make an even easier example to show that you can have equilibrium with a bubble in the savings account, which just means an arbitrage there in the usual sense. So these things in these models can exist. Let me just conclude briefly, because you get the existence and uniqueness of equilibria, and it is expressed in terms of existence and uniqueness of SD. Okay, so it's if and only if here and in this setting. Okay, the SDs do not have closed form solutions, but of course, since you have them, then you can use some numerical solutions if you want to see how the equilibria look like. Now, you have this multiplicity of equilibria. And we have seen that it's a very simple setting. Now, I'm asking here if it is a mathematical curiosity. What I mean is that Gordon already pointed out that generically you have uniqueness of equilibrium. You might have multiplicity, but this does not really happen generically. And in these cases that it does happen, are they really just mathematical, or is there an economic implication? But I have not thought about these things very much. I'm just coming back to this, as I told you. Here is something that I have not discussed, and I think it's important. When we constructed the equilibrium, everything had to be written in terms of P. This P was the capital distribution. Okay? So the state variable is the capital distribution, which means you have to know the capital distribution. And there doesn't seem to be this seems to be preventing Markovian structure in the markets. It's impossible just from the knowledge of S at time t to understand the whole capital distribution. You have to know all the information up to time t. Okay, so it's not clear to me how you can get this, and I'm pretty sure even if you use constant coefficients in the model, this seems to be quite difficult. And well, again, this is something that I am thinking, but it seems that you must know exactly what the distribution of wealth is in the economy. All right, the very few things that I just wrote down at the last minute of what I'm thinking for the future. You know, something of course that Gordon discussed also, you have workable expressions, so you can do further analysis, right? The effect of the primitives, of the views, and the consumption rate, the effect basically of what are your preferences on equilibrium, what is the effect of the dividends. You really have SDs now, so you can do things there. Okay. Of course, we are taking we have a price taking assumption in the model. There is no large investor, so it must be a large number of agents, so that each one of them doesn't have a lot of capital. We have heard a lot about how I has to be finite. This is the set of the agents. It seems to me, okay, I have not figured this out completely, but you can make it most probably any space, and then you can have here distributions of capital. So this is probability distributions there, and you can write the equivalent SDE involving the whole movement of the capital distribution there, okay, instead of each individual of a finite number. So this could justify a little bit more the like price taking, and of course you have then to check that everything is okay, in the sense that the capital distribution does not degenerate at some point only to one investor. Okay, so you can actually study also limiting capital distributions if you want. Okay, here is something that I'm not perfectly clear whether, well, at least it will satisfy economists very much. This can be a little bit weird. So the views and the consumption streams that we had, they were fixed from the beginning. Okay, so people were not allowed to change their views with respect to what they see in the market, right? So these were given as primitives. Now you could, if you wanted to, make these things depend on past data of the economy, and by this I mean personal performance, okay, performance of other agents, okay. So if you see that they're doing better than you, maybe you should reevaluate your views and everything. You should look at maybe consumption patterns of others when everybody else is consuming, you want to consume as well, okay. So this brings this effect, and in this way you should it becomes a quite more like a game now, because everyone is seeing what everybody else is doing. So it could be possible that you get such equilibria. The only concern, of course, then is that you do not have a good explanation of why people would want to do this, because there are no actions that tell you that they would want to behave like this with updating the information. So there is no story like expected utility. Okay, so I'm done. Thank you very much.